Hey guys, welcome to the Filming with Josh podcast. I'm your host, Joshua Milligan, and this week I'm going to be talking to you all about how to capture perfect sounding audio for interviews.
This is the Filming with Josh podcast, brought to you by Rustic River Media. Welcome to the videographer's home for tips, tricks, and how to make flicks.
Welcome to episode number 27 of the Filming with Josh podcast. I don't know about you guys, but I am ready to get out and do some video projects. It seems like it has been forever. It has been about 8 weeks now since I have done much video work, and it is driving me crazy, especially considering that is my primary source of income. So I hope that we can get back to work here soon. We're starting to open things up here in Texas, but my clients are kind of holding out at the moment, still keeping their projects on pause. I think a lot of that is they're just trying to navigate through the financial repercussions that have occurred over the last couple of months. So hopefully things will get rolling soon, but we're hanging in there in the time being. I actually this morning just finished sending out one of my largest, if not my largest bid I've ever submitted. If I get this project, it will hands down be the biggest project I've ever received. So I'm hoping that that goes through. If so, then I'll be talking about it on the Filming with Josh page, and we'll be doing a lot of behind the scenes stuff as that project kind of moves forward. So fingers crossed, and I'm saying up some prayers because I really would love to get this job and start bouncing back from this pandemic. If you haven't had a chance yet, last week I released a blog called The Content Creator's Bible to Storing, Organizing, and Backing Up Everything. It's less of a blog and really more of a guide, and it kind of takes you through how to store your footage from the field to field drives and how to put it on storage drives when you get home. It talks about editing drives, all the different types of drives that are out there, how to back up your content, what kind of drives to buy, how to format your drives. It talks about file structure, how to organize your content so that everything's easy to find and makes a lot of sense, how to prepare your content to go to an editor if you're not going to be the one editing the project, and so on and so forth. I think that this guide is the perfect resource for learning how to organize your content, back it up, and know which drives to buy, how to price drive space or storage cost into your projects, and so on and so forth. So if you're someone who's been looking for information on which drives to buy, how to back up your content, how to organize everything, this guide is for you. I wrote this for professional filmmakers, aspiring videographers, as well as professional video production companies who are looking for a step-by-step guide to hand off to new hires. If you read this article from top to bottom, you will learn everything you need to know about how to be organized and how to back up your content. It's a really great blog. So if you haven't had a chance to check it out, you can find it either on the Filming with Josh Facebook group. Just go there and look for recent posts last week, or you can go to my website, www.rusticriver.media, and click on the Filming with Josh tab, and it's currently the top most recent blog. So you can find it there as well. So if you are someone who wants to learn more about storing, organizing, and backing up your content, this is the resource for you. I'm recording this podcast today inside of my walk-in closet in my house, and I'm having to do that because my iMac is like screaming along in my office, making a ton of noise because I have been editing this multi-layered After Effects track, and it takes forever for the computer to try to render it because I have like 30 or 40, something like that, videos all layered on top of each other to make this giant video collage. And my computer is like giving me the middle finger today. And the funny thing is that it's so much going on in After Effects. I've got a great computer and it's really powerful, but I have so much going on for this particular project that I can't really view it back anywhere close to real time. So I'm having to export it to find the problems, then fix the problems and re-export it. And I've never had to quite do that before because my computer can handle pretty much anything I throw at it. But I finally found the one thing that my computer's like, nope. And so it takes it about an hour and a half or more to export this file, just a 10 second or 15 second, something like that, collage of videos. But anyway, it takes it a while, and my computer's fans are really getting wound up. So are my hard drives. So I left my office and decided this would be a great time to record a podcast, but it's way too loud in my office to record a podcast. So I moved into my walk-in closet. And the reason why I'm using a walk-in closet is because it's really padded, right? There's not as much echo or reverb in a walk-in closet, especially, well, I mean, it would be if it's empty, but if it's full of clothes and shoes and things like that, typically you could go into a walk-in closet, clap your hands and listen, and you will not hear an echo. And if that's the case, it's a pretty good place to record audio. And so today I'm recording my podcast in here. Actually, this ought to be one of the better sounding podcasts I've done, because I am recording it in my walk-in closet, and I'm using my favorite microphone, the MKH 8050 shotgun mic. I don't usually pull this out for my podcast, because for me to create a podcast for you guys, I want it to be quick and fast. So I do it on my Rode Podcaster mic that's connected to my computer and my office, which is definitely not built for sound. But, you know, I don't want to drag all my gear out every time I have to do a podcast. If I do, then, it, you know, I won't ever do it. But today is one of those times where I was like, you know what? I've got nothing else to do. My computer is taking forever, so I'll pull out my gear, go in the walk-in closet, and record it. So if this podcast sounds a lot better than other podcasts I've done in the past, that is why. But speaking of audio, that's what today's podcast is all about. It's all about how to record great-sounding audio for interviews. Interviews are a necessary skill set. Knowing how to record interviews is a necessary skill set for virtually any filmmaker at any level. It doesn't matter if you're creating a promotional video for a small business or if you're shooting a high-end documentary for Netflix. The chances are in your career, you're going to have a lot of times where you have to record interviews. So knowing how to properly light an interview, how to block an interview, how to decorate the set, how to move things around, how to frame up your character, how to record it from different angles, and how to capture pristine audio is a very important skill set. And if you get good at it, you can make good money just off of interviews alone. So this is a very important skill set to have, how to record and capture really great looking and really great sounding interviews. And today I want to talk about the latter, the sound part, because it's very important that your audio for an interview is really, really good. If it's not good, it doesn't matter how good the video looks. If the audio is not good, the content is not good. Audio is arguably more important than the video quality. You've probably read that somewhere or heard that, and it really is true. The reality is you can watch a documentary that shows old footage from 30 years ago, or maybe a bunch of shaky iPhone footage, if the audio is great sounding and the content and the story is there, right? But imagine a beautiful video that's shot off of an Alexa Mini that has a huge budget, but the audio is really bad and it sounds bad and you can't really make out what people are saying, you're gonna click off of that, right? Audio is extremely important. And in interviews, it is, besides what the people are saying, it is the second most important part of that interview. And so knowing how to capture great sounding audio for an interview is, I mean, that should be a top priority for any filmmaker at any level. When you go into an interview, there's a couple different ways you can approach it. It could be a quick interview where you're maybe shooting at an event, or you're on a run and gun project and you're just trying to pull someone to the side and get a quick interview with them. Or interviews could take you 3 or 4 hours or more to set up for a sit-down interview. So there's different levels of interviews. And we'll kind of touch briefly on both, but most of what I'm going to talk about today is more of a studio interview or any interview you would do where you're going to sit down and light it. But I will touch briefly on capturing run and gun interviews as well. When it comes to capturing interviews, probably the number one tool you can have is a lav mic. Wired or wireless, a lav mic is a huge tool to have. Now, disclaimer, and we're going to talk about this today, I don't use lav audio a whole lot for interviews. I actually use boom mic audio for the vast majority of my interviews, but you can almost always guarantee that I'm going to be running a lav mic at the same time. And if I can't bring or can't use a boom mic, then a lav mic is going to be the mic I use anyway. So in both situations, whether a lav is the only thing I can use, or whether I'm recording boom audio with a lav as a backup, you'll notice that lav mics are in both scenarios. So to me, the number one thing you should purchase for capturing interview audio is a lav mic. And the reason is lav mics are kind of like Swiss Army microphones. The reason being is you can use them inside or outside, whereas boom mics, some boom mics work great inside, some work great outside, but not vice versa. And so lav mics, when you purchase a lav mic, it's a great first mic to get for a sit-down interview because you can use it in both situations, indoors or outdoors. And the reason is because lav mics are what you call omnidirectional microphones. What that means is they record a vision of basketball. It's like it's almost like capturing sound all the way around, like a basketball. And it's capturing what you're saying. It's capturing audio from the left of you, from the right of you, in front of you, behind you. Lav mics are just capturing pretty much in this big round pattern the audio that's around it. And the closer you are to that lav mic, the stronger the audio will sound. And that's a really key factor in everything we're going to talk about today, is that the closer the mic is to the source of audio, the better the audio is going to sound. Nothing will make audio sound bad worse than having a microphone far away from the person who's talking or from the source of the noise. So that if you're looking for like a number one, just one takeaway to take from this entire podcast, it's that you should always do your best to be as close to the subject's audio as possible. So on a lav mic, typically you would clip it somewhere, usually either on the chest of the subject. You might put it out, tuck it up like in the brim of a hat right above the subject, but you're going to have it pretty close towards their head and their mouth. And since the mic is omnidirectional like a basketball, it's going to capture that audio, whether it's mounted under your chin, like on your chest, or whether it's mounted to the brim of a cap or whatever, you're going to pick it up pretty quick because the lav is close to the mouth and is going to be picking up the audio as it comes out of your mouth. And as such, lav mics are great mics to use because you can hide them on people, record audio with them inside or outside, and it doesn't matter because the first thing they're going to pick up is going to be what that person is saying. It's going to be their dialogue. That's what makes them really good. Now, when you're using a lav mic, there are several ways to mount them, and I'm not going to go into all that today. There's tons of articles and YouTube videos you can watch that explain how to mount different lav mics, but do know that there is no one-size-fit-all for mounting a lav mic. When you purchase a lav mic, you can either clip it to the outside of someone's shirt. You could get vampire clips and clip them underneath or behind their shirt. You can tape them to your subject's chest. You can hide them underneath a tie or through a button of a shirt. There's tons and tons of different ways to mount a lav mic. But one of the most important factors in mounting a lav mic is making sure you don't get scratchy clothing noise. That will destroy your audio. If you've been doing video for a while and you have a lav mic, you've probably experienced this because you're going to hear the scratchiness of the audio if you have scratchy clothing, and that's all you're going to hear when you're trying to listen to your audio when you are playing it back after you've recorded it, and that's not good. You don't want that. That ruins your audio. What we want to do today is talk about how to capture pristine audio that doesn't have things like that happen. So when you mount your lav mic, the first thing you should do is listen to that audio through a pair of good headphones and listen for scratchiness. Have your subject kind of move their arms around and that type of thing, and listen and see if there's a scratchiness. And if there is, you need to grab that lav mic and reposition it and try to work it around to see if you can place it to where you can get rid of that scratchiness. If your clothing is rubbing against the lav, then you might want to reposition how you're mounting it to the clothing. If you don't mind seeing the lav, perhaps you might mount it outside of the clothing. I personally do not like seeing lav mics. So unless I'm doing a run and gun documentary style shoot where I'm just throwing a lav on someone, I almost always do my best to hide a lav mic, which is more challenging because there's a more chance of having a rubbing on that rubbing scratchy sound on the microphone. But I typically try to hide the mic. And so I mount it in ways where I like tape it to the chest and maybe put some tape over the mic so the clothing noise won't brush up against the mic itself. Or I tell the person I'm interviewing to wear clothes that aren't super scratchy sounding, you know, clothes that are more like cotton or something that doesn't make a lot of noise. Those are types of clothing I look for. So when I hide the mic, you don't hear that scratchy sound. But sometimes you cannot avoid that scratchy sound. A good example is doctor clothing. I have found over the years when filming interviews of doctors, whether it's a dentist or a plastic surgeon or whomever, I cannot get rid of that scratchy sound with my lav mic. And so I end up not even being able to use the lav audio because it's so bad. In fact, anymore, if I'm filming a doctor that's wearing doctor's clothes, I don't even put a lav on them because I already know that the clothing noise is so scratchy that there's no way that the audio is going to sound good. And why it's so scratchy is it's the clothing itself. It's not the clothes hitting the lav. It's just the actual clothing noise is just really loud. So when you're mounting a lav mic, you want to try to mount it in a way where the clothes aren't rubbing on the mic itself very much. And you want to mount it on clothes that don't have a lot of scratchy sound to it. Because if you do that, if there is that scratchiness, you're probably not going to be able to find a way to remove that in post, or you're going to be spending all your time trying to remove that in post. And we just want to avoid that altogether. So you need to put on a pair of headphones, listen for that scratchiness, have your subject move their arms around and act like they're talking. And if you hear something scratching, take the time right then and there. Don't say, screw it, I'll fix it in post. That's a bad idea. Take the time to reposition the lav and try again and keep doing it until you eliminate that scratchiness. That is probably one of the biggest tips for mounting lav mics is try to hide them. If you're doing commercial work, if you're doing doc work, it's a little bit more okay to have it showing, but do your best to eliminate that scratchiness because that will kill your lav audio more than anything. If you're filming outside interviews, having, a lav with a windscreen might be pretty important. So you can actually find windscreens online. There's different brands that make them. I think the kind I use is called Bumblebee, maybe, or Bumblebee, something like that. I could be saying that wrong, but I have one that I really like that breaks up wind noise pretty good. If it's really, really noisy outside, really windy, maybe you're filming an outdoor video, you might can hide that lav underneath a jacket to help protect some of that wind noise. But try not to bury it under so many articles of clothes that you're starting to muffle the audio too, because that's also something you don't want. You want to be able to hear, you want that lav to be able to hear the audio waves, the sound waves, and capture them quickly without muffling it through 10 layers of clothes. So keep that in mind too. But just do your best to try to get rid of that wind noise by using windscreens or maybe hiding it under a jacket if it's cold enough for that, and listen for that scratchy sounding audio. But lavs are a great place to start because they're pretty affordable and you can use them inside and you can use them outside because they're good in pretty much all types of environments. They're also great because your subject can walk around. Like if you're doing a walk and talk interview on a gimbal, for instance, and you're picking up their audio and they're walking and talking to the camera, you know, lav mics are great for all those different situations because they can allow the person to be free from being tied to the camera. And lav audio, it sounds pretty good. It's usually not going to sound as good as a boom audio would, but it still sounds really good. And you can buy wireless lav systems, or you can buy lav systems that are attached to pocket recorders. If you are real tight on cash, or if you just need to throw a mic on someone, let's say you're shooting wedding videos and you just want an extra channel of audio and you want to mic up the preacher or something, it's okay to do a wired lav mic that's mounted to a pocket recorder. But I usually try to tell people to go the wireless route, spend the extra money. You don't have to spend a ton to get a decent wireless lav today. There's lots of different brands out there. And the reason why I think it's important to go with the wireless route is you want to be able to monitor that audio. If you mic up the pastor of a wedding, for instance, I'm not a wedding guy, so keep this in mind, but I am an audio guy. And if you mount a lav mic up to a pastor and maybe he goes to the bathroom and splashes his face and repositions his clothes a little bit, the mic might move and pick up the scratchiness of like his jacket or something, and you won't be listening to that audio because it's just in a pocket recorder slipped in his pocket, and you're not going to be able to monitor it. And so you won't be picking up on that scratchy sound, or maybe he accidentally moved it and the wind is hitting it directly and the wind noise is really bad. And you won't be able to hear that until you get home and you plug your audio in the computer and it sounds really bad and there's nothing you can do about it. So I always try to recommend that people, when they get a lav system, they go with a wireless miking system so that they can directly monitor the audio, because it's the only way you're really going to know what you're getting. And I think it's really important. You won't see on any big budget project people using microphones that they can't monitor. So I always tell people, you don't have to spend a big budget to get big budget results. You just have to do the little things. And one of the little things is monitoring your audio. So keep that in mind. Try to, if you can afford it, get a wireless system and only use the pocket recorder systems if you just desperately need another channel and you just got to throw it on someone. But at that point, just know you're kind of hoping for the best. And I just personally think if it's audio you really want to get, hoping for the best is usually not the best approach. If you get a wireless lav system, there's lots of different ones out there. My two favorite brands are Sony and Sennheiser. They're both very comparable. I think the Sennheisers come with better stock lav mics than the Sonys do, but they're both really good systems. I used to have Sennheiser. I switched to Sony, though. The reason why I switched is because Sony's wireless systems actually communicate directly with my FS7, so I can unlock two extra channels of audio. On my FS7, I can record up to four channels, and that's really important to me. And their wireless systems can integrate into the hot shoe on the FS7 to open up those extra two channels of audio. You can't do that on FS5s, and I don't recommend you use the hot shoe directly on the A7 cameras because there's this weird auto gain control that kicks in that sounds really bad. But on the FS7, FS7 Mark II, and FX9, that hot shoe and the handle is a great way to unlock two extra channels of audio. And so I run Sony wireless lav systems just for that reason alone. Sennheiser, though, is really good. It's another great brand. And again, I think Sennheiser's, the actual lav mic itself, sounds a little bit better than the Sony's. That brings me to another point, though. If you do have a wireless lav system and you're looking to upgrade your sound quality, you don't really need to upgrade your transmitter and receiver. As long as your wireless system can accept aftermarket lav mics, and a lav mic is the actual mic in the wire, right? And if your system accepts aftermarket lav wires, or lav mics, then I suggest before you upgrade your wireless system, go looking at aftermarket lavs. There are companies like Countryman, Tram, and Sanken, among others, that make super high quality lav mics that will plug straight into your wireless transmitter and completely upgrade the quality of the audio you're recording. I'm currently running Sanken COS-11D lav mics on my Sony wireless mic system. So I have stock mics, and then I have the Sanken aftermarket lavs that mount into the Sony system. And I got the Sanken COS-11D in Sony mount. You can get them in Sennheiser mount and other mounts. And that's a really great upgrade. The Sanken COS-11D is the industry standard lav mic for most video and film applications. Countryman is another popular brand. They make teeny tiny little mics that are that sound great, but are really easy to hide on clothing because the mic capsule itself is so small. Tram makes, they have the TR50, which is a really great, really popular sounding mic. So before you go off and upgrade your wireless system to get better audio, look at changing out the lav mic itself to an aftermarket lav that fits your transmitter. That's a really great way to immediately upgrade the quality of audio coming from your wireless system. So while I feel that Sennheiser mics, Sennheiser systems come with better microphones, the Sony systems, you can just upgrade their mics to an aftermarket mic, and now you have the Sony integration with great sounding audio, and that's why I went with Sony. I do keep Sony's stock lavs on hand because the Sanken COS 11D mics that I run are very expensive, so I save those aftermarket mics for sit-down interviews and things like that. If I'm doing run-and-gun shoots, like a documentary, and I know that's, or an event, and I know that people are going to be ripping the lavs off their shirt and stuff, I don't want them to tear up my aftermarket lavs. So I keep the Sony lavs for those applications, and it sounds fine. And there's nothing wrong with the Sony lav. I just think that the stock lav on the Sennheiser sounds better. There is the Rode Filmmaker kit. There is several other ones out there that are affordable that you can look into. One word or one area of caution is I recommend you stay away from wireless systems that have built-in batteries that you can't change, because you're undoubtedly going to find yourself in a situation where you're on a project and you're not going to be able to charge your batteries and your mics are going to die. So interchangeable batteries in a wireless system to me is like that's a deal breaker. If you can't change the batteries in your wireless mics, and I don't recommend going that route. With my microphones, I like to run the Panasonic AnyLoop Pro batteries. I've got a bunch of them and they'll last me all day. I've never ran out of battery power on my wireless mics in a single day using those AnyLoop Pros. And they're good for up to like 500 charges. And that's a lot of charges, especially if you have several sets of them. So I like to run the AnyLoop Pros. They power my Sony lavs or my Sony mics transmitters and receivers all day long. And I feel like that's a great system. And just use the stock lavs for running gun projects and the aftermarket lavs for better quality audio. And you don't have to spend a ton of money on the aftermarket lavs either. I know mine, the ones I have are pretty pricey, but you can get really great aftermarket lavs for 150, 200 bucks if you do some shopping around. Like I think the trams are like 200, 250. I could be wrong, but they're pretty affordable. And that's a great, like I said, a great way to upgrade your lav quality. So those are some different things to know about lav miking. Now, when I run my interviews, I typically am going to be using boom mics for the majority of my audio. And that's because I typically prefer the sound quality of a boom mic. And you might be, for some of you, you might be wondering what a boom mic or boom audio is. And basically it's just, it's a microphone that you mount to a boom pole or a retractable pole that you can extend. And that microphone, you will typically have it above or below the person who's speaking, just out of frame. You might see this in film sets. You might have seen behind the scene pictures of a boom operator holding a pole over their head and there's a mic mounted in the front of it, and they're having that mic angled and facing the people that are speaking. That's a boom setup. I like to run boom audio for the majority of my interviews because it typically sounds better. For boom mics, I only use them when I'm filming stationary interviews. And that is because you have to run a C-stand or a mic stand that has a clamp on it, and then you have to have the boom pole mounted in the clamp, and then you either have to have it connected wirelessly with a plug-on wireless transmitter, or you have to run a XLR cable from the mic to your camera, one or the other. And so it's a lot more setup time, and you can't like, you can't have a boom mic following someone unless you actually pay for a boom operator, which is a day rate you'd have to come up with and build into the project. And I have done that for certain projects. But most of the time when I'm using boom audio, it's for sit-down interviews where I can put or stand-up interviews where I can have the time to set up the boom mic and have all the wires or wireless stuff set up and everything else. And that's when I'll typically use them. But they do sound really, really, really good for sit-down interviews because the quality of audio you can capture from boom mics is so exceptional compared to a lav mic. And the reason is that boom mics are directional. Remember earlier I said that lav mics are omnidirectional. They are like a basketball. They record everything in kind of like a big circle around the mic. Boom mics are going to be more directional. A boom mic, a good example of one type of a boom mic is a shotgun mic. Shotgun mics can obviously be used on top of your camera, but shotgun mics are really designed to be used on a boom pole. Obviously, not all of them are designed that way or with that in mind, like when you look at the Rode VideoMic Pro, which, of course, you can use on a boom pole, but it's really designed from the factory to be used on top of a camera. It's a small shotgun mic that's there for capturing ambient audio when you're running gun shooting. But most shotgun mics are actually designed to be used on a boom pole. And the reason is that shotgun mics are directional. They pick up what the mic is pointed at in a cone pattern. And the further you get away from the mic, the wider that pattern is. And the closer you are to the mic, the tighter that pattern is. And again, remember earlier I said the closer you are to a mic, the better sounding the audio is. Well, with a boom mic, you will typically find a boom mic needs to be about 8, 12, 18, maybe 24 inches away from the subject's mouth. So if you're filming a sit-down interview, you would typically have your boom pole mounted to a stand, and you'd have the mic facing the person's mouth, usually slanted kind of at an angle, pointed towards their mouth where their audio is going to be coming from. And that mic will typically be anywhere from 12 to 18, maybe 24 inches away from the person that's speaking. And because that mic is directional and it's pointed right at their mouth, that's what it's picking up. Unlike a lav mic, who is picking up not only the speaker's audio, but everything else that's going on. It's not going to sound as powerful as or as rich as a directional mic like a shotgun mic would. And that's why you see people running around with boom poles all the time rather than just mic everyone up wirelessly. So if you're gonna be wanting to look for the most pristine audio you can get during an interview, rich, powerful sounding audio, you can get some of that with Afterlav mics and some really good magic in post. But most of that audio is coming from a really nice sounding boom mic. And here's the thing: you don't have to spend a lot of money for a boom setup. You can get a boom pole from Rode for $50. You can get a cheap $50 boom pole. You could buy a Rode NTG1, which is like $100, $150, something like that. Super cheap mic. You can get yourself a 25-foot XLR cable and a stand to hold the boom pole. And so for under $300, maybe $400, you could have a boom setup, and it would sound fantastic. Here's the thing, though. When it comes to boom mics, there is no such thing as one size fits all. Remember earlier I said that lav mics sounded great inside and outside. Boom mics, however, there are certain boom mics that sound good inside but not good outside, and vice versa. Take shotgun mics, for instance. They sound great outside. And in a directional mic, that when you're outside and your subject is speaking and the mic is pointed right at them, it's going to sound awesome. It also handle wind noise pretty good, especially if you put like a nice windscreen on them. They sound great outside. But you take a shotgun mic inside, and typically, unless you're in a padded room, like right now I'm recording this audio on a shotgun mic, but I'm in a padded room. There's no reverb. There's no echo in this room. And so the mic sounds great. But if you typically take a shotgun mic inside where there's echo in a room, that mic is going to sound like crap. And that's because shotgun mics have what's called a rear lobe. They pick up what's called a rear lobe, which means it's picking up audio not only in front of it, but actually it's picking up some audio from behind it. And what happens is, think about this, when you speak, when your person is speaking, the audio, the sound waves are coming out of their mouth and are going towards the microphone, and it's picking that up. But those sound waves eventually hit the wall inside of a house and then start bouncing all around the room. And since that mic actually picks up, a shotgun mic picks up a little bit of what's behind it with its rear lobe, it's eventually actually going to pick up the sound waves that are bouncing off the wall, and you're going to hear the echo. It's going to sound really, really bad. And you might experience this if you've recorded, if you're recording somebody talking inside off of your Rode VideoMic Pro or your shotgun mic on your video camera. You might notice that inside it sounds like garbage and sounds kind of thin or tinny or echoey. And what that is you're picking up the reflections of the room, the audio that's being reflected off of the walls, and then it bouncing back into the back end of that shotgun mic. And that's why shotgun mics typically sound awful inside. Now, there are some shotgun mics that handle inside audio better than others, but as a rule of thumb, you typically won't want to use a shotgun mic inside unless you can determine that the room you're in is not very echoey or doesn't have very much reverb. The best way to do that is to walk into a room and clap your hands and listen. And if you hear echo of your hand claps, don't use a shotgun mic. If you go into a room and you clap your hands and you don't hear much of an echo or any echo at all, like in my closet right now, then it's okay to use a shotgun mic. So that's kind of how you figure that out. Just go in a room, clap your hands. If you hear an echo, don't use a shotgun. If you don't hear an echo, use it. That's pretty much how you figure that out. If you are inside and the room is kind of echoey or has reverb, like most rooms will have, then it's better off that your boom mic is either a cardioid or supercardioid mic. Cardioids and supercardioid mics are typically going to be smaller than a shotgun mic, but they're still directional like a shotgun mic. Supercardioids are a lot more directional than cardioids. They're more similar to a shotgun mic. Cardioids are a little bit wider pattern, but are still directional. Both of those mics don't have much of a rear lobe pattern on the back of the microphone. So when the reflections happen of the audio bouncing around the room, they handle that a lot better and sound a lot better inside than a shotgun mic would. Now you might be asking yourself, well, if that's the case, why not just buy a cardioid or a supercardioid mic and use it outdoors? Well, unlike a shotgun mic, they typically don't pick up audio as great from a further distance, and unlike a shotgun mic, they don't handle wind noise as good. They just sound kind of crappy when it gets windy out, even with the windscreen. You might could get away with a high-end blimp, but if you don't know what a blimp is, just Google it. But for the most part, they're just not great mics to use outside. So you kind of have to understand when it comes to boom miking, the typical rule of thumb is going to be shotgun mics outside or inside if there's no echo or reverb in the room when you clap your hands. And if there is echo or reverb, then you want to switch to either a cardioid or supercardioid. Now, you might be asking, you know, why would I get a cardioid or a supercardioid? You know, which one should I get? And really, that comes down to personal preference. If you're looking for your first mic for inside recording, you could just get away with a cardioid mic. Or if you're looking for something that's a little bit more richer sounding, you could try a supercardioid mic. That just kind of comes down to trial error and just doing some reading. I have actually both. I have two cardioids and one supercardioid, and I use them for different things. I won't get into that today. But it's just important to know that if you're going to use a boom mic inside, get either a supercardioid or cardioid mic. If you're going to use a mic outside for on a boom mic or on a boom pole, then typically look for a shotgun mic. When I record my interviews, that's how I like to do it. I like to have boom audio as my main source of audio because it sounds so good. If I'm recording a project where I can afford to bring a sound guy, then I'll have him actually hold a boom pole and record the audio for me to a Zoom recorder. If I'm doing it on my own and I'm recording everything to my camera, then I'll run my boom mics either with wires or I use what's called a plug-on transmitter, which actually converts your shotgun mic or cardioid mics into wireless mics and powers them with phantom power, and then you can pick them up on your Sony transmitters or Sennheiser or whatever brand you're working with. And so when I'm by myself, I'm either using boom poles with wires or XLR cables, or I'm using boom poles with plug-on transmitters, and I'm recording the audio into my camera. And that's typically how I do my sit-down or standing up stationary interviews inside or outside. When I run audio on a boom pole for an interview, I like to run the wireless lav I mentioned earlier as a backup track. And the reason is what happens if you get home and you notice that that shotgun mic or that cardioid mic didn't sound as good as you thought it did, or maybe it picked up more echo than you realized was there, or maybe there was something wrong. I don't know. The point is you just never know, right? And having a lav as a backup track is a really safe way to go, because if you don't like your boom audio for some reason, you can use the lav mic, and at the very least, you have that lav mic as a backup. If you are recording, interviews with both mics, you might even bleed the two together. You might use your boom mic as your primary audio source, but maybe you let a little bit of the lav audio bleed in on your final edit. Maybe you have a little bit of lav audio. Maybe you turn it down, but you still hear it slightly because maybe it makes the audio sound richer because you have a boom mic mixed with a lav mic. You can do that too, and sometimes I do that depending on the project and the sound I'm going for. And so it's just really good as a rule of thumb if you can just to throw a lav mic on your subject in addition to having a boom mic. Sometimes I can't even use a lav mic. It goes back to that doctor clothing. I've learned that there's no way on the planet I can get good sounding audio no matter how I mount the mic when it comes to using a lav mic on doctor's clothes. So because of that, I just use boom audio. But for the most part, I try to run both. Now, if I'm on a run and gun shoot and I'm filming like a fishing show and I just need to pull someone aside and get a quick interview with them, I'll throw a lav mic on them. I'm not going to drag a boom pole around with me and do that whole thing. So for quick run and gun type stuff, lavs are great to use. But for most sit down, like well lit interviews, I'm typically going to use boom audio and I'm going to have wireless as a backup. Now, if I'm running two-person interviews, or what I call dual interviews, where you have two subjects that are speaking back and forth between each other, then I'll typically run two boom poles with two boom mics and then two wireless lav backup mics, and I'll record all those at the same time. So each person has their own boom mic and their own wireless mic, and it sounds really great that way. If you don't want to purchase two boom setups, you could just use two lavs and get away with it that way. But if you have the money, you could purchase two boom mics and go that route. As far as which boom mics to get, I have two shotgun mics that I use for outdoor dialogue. Those are, I have two Sennheiser MKH 8050 shotgun mics. For inside dialogue, I have two Sennheiser MKH 8040 cardioid mics. Those are actually a stereo match set from the factory that were matched together, so they sound exactly the same. Sometimes there's differences between individual mics, so those are a match set, so I have those. And then I have I also have one super cardioid mic, Sennheiser MKH 8050. So those are the mics that I run. I use the 8040s or 8050s for inside stuff, and I use the 8060 shotgun mics for outside stuff. The 8060 shotgun mics are also the same mics I put on my FS7, just because I love the way they sound. Now, these are really expensive mics. They're the same type of microphone that was used on Game of Thrones. A lot of the audio on Game of Thrones was recorded on different Sennheiser MKH mics, and they're going to run you like $1,400-$1,500 a mic, and that's pretty dang pricey. So if you don't want to spend that kind of money, there are lots and lots of other options out there that you can find for $200-$300 that sound really good. You just have to do your research and see what's out there. You don't have to spend that much money to get grid sounding audio. I just really like the sound off those mics, and so that's what I'm going with. And right now, what you're hearing is a Sennheiser MKH 8060. When I do voiceovers, this is the mic I use because it sounds so good. When I do boom audio outside, or if it's inside where there's not many reflections in a room, this is the mic I use. And it's also the same mic I throw on my FS7. I love it. But again, you don't have to have a mic like that. You could get a Rode NTG1 for outside boom audio, and you could find a cheap, similar priced mic for inside audio as well. So don't feel like you have to spend a ton of money to get good sounding audio. It's just important you know the different types of mics. That's way more important than the mic brand you go with. When you're recording your audio from a microphone, whether lav or a boom mic, you typically want your decibel levels to hit around a max peak of negative 12. If you're shooting on and recording your audio into a camera and it doesn't show you decibel levels, then a good rule of thumb is to try to have your max audio level, the loudest audio level that the person's going to be speaking to, hit around 3/4 of the way up the audio bar on your camera. So if you're hitting around 3/4 of the way at the loudest, then you're safe. Or if you're using like a Zoom recorder that actually shows you decibel levels, then around -12 is safe. Now you can go above that if your person laughs really loud or something and goes above that, it's okay. But what you don't want is you never want the audio to hit zero. So to be safe, you could sit someone down, mic them up with a boom mic and a lav mic, either or both, and just tell them to start talking just like they're going to do for the interview and look at the audio levels and start listening to the audio to make sure everything sounds good and look at where those levels are hitting. And if they're hitting at around, you know, adjust your audio to where they're hitting around -12 or around 3/4 of the way up, and then you're good. Ask them to make sure that they're speaking as loud as they're going to get. And then when you start the interview, just watch it. And if they start to get a lot louder, you can slowly dial it down, or you could stop the interview, adjust your audio, and ask them to restart. But be sure that you, every take you get never has anything that goes above zero. If it does and you're doing an interview, stop the interview and have them restart it, because you cannot fix bad audio when you get home. You can eliminate some things and you can massage audio to make it sound better in certain cases, but if you blow your audio, there is no getting it back. If you have tons of wind noise, good luck fixing it. And if the echo's there, you can adjust it some, but if you have tons of echo in your audio, reverb in your audio, you're going to have a hard time massaging that out and having the audio sound good. If you pick up air conditioning ducts or refrigerator noise, it's going to be hard to eliminate that. So just be careful when you're recording audio that you pay attention to those different types of sounds, because they can really be hard, if not impossible, to fix in post. The same thing with scratchy lav audio, things like that. So listen to your audio and watch the levels and never let them go to zero, and always try to have your target be around -12. When you're editing your audio, I'm not going to go into the different ways of editing your audio, because I could spend a year talking about that. And there's so much I don't even know. You could make a full-time career out of just being an audio guy or a sound engineer. So I'm not going to go there. But I will say, when you're exporting your audio or you're making your final edit, it's good to have your dialogue audio have a target max of -6 decibels in your editing program. So -6 dB is a good place for your audio levels to max out at, and having them bounce up and down between -12 and -6 is a good range. They could dip down to -18 if they're talking kind of quiet, but don't let them go past -6 if possible. You might have seen people not use headphones when monitoring audio. Don't be that guy. Take the time to plug in headphones. Just because your audio levels look good in camera or on your recorder does not mean that you're not picking up something else bad there. So always use headphones. Also, another thing to keep in mind is you can record your audio into a recorder like a Zoom recorder and record to a WAV file. WAV files are typically going to sound better than your in-camera file. But if your camera has really good audio preamps like an FS7 does or a C300 Mark II does, then you can record the audio in camera and it still sound really good. So you don't have to use a recorder to get good sounding audio, but recorders do have their advantages because they do record slightly higher quality files. So for voiceovers, I typically use recorders so I can capture my audio on super high quality WAV files. And then if I'm recording interviews and things, I typically don't mind recording it in camera because it sounds good enough. So those are some things to note. Now, what happens if you're recording in an environment that is pretty echoey, and it's so echoey you're even picking up the echo on your lav mic or your boom mic, even if you're using a cardioid or super cardioid mic? In that situation, I recommend trying to record your interview in a different room and convince your subject to record in a different room. And if you can't record in a different room, then try to pad that room with furniture. You can put carpet or towels or blankets down on the floor to try to absorb audio. So adding padding to the room helps absorb those reflections. If I didn't have clothes inside of this walk-in closet, this would sound horrible because all of the echo that would be in this little tiny room. But the clothes immediately dampen that sound. So if you're in a room that sounds kind of echoey, you can add lots of things like blankets and quilts and towels and furniture to dampen the room. And what you're essentially trying to do is have those sound waves, rather than bounce off the wall, you want them to hit something like clothes or furniture and die. You want it to hit that clothing or hit that furniture, and you want that to absorb the sound wave rather than bounce off the walls. So that's kind of why you see padded rooms for voiceover recordings or music studios and things like that. That's what they're doing, is they're dampening that sound and taking out the reverb. So if you are recording audio somewhere and you have to record it in that space for some reason, maybe it looks really good, that try to pad the room with things like jackets and blankets and furniture and things like that to absorb a lot of that echo or reverb. My suggestion is, when you go to record an interview, always scout the location first. Don't just sit down and do it somewhere. Take the time to, especially if you're going to be indoors, take the time to go into the room, clap your hands, listen and see how bad it sounds. And if it sounds really bad, try to find another location. Even if there is echo in a room and you have a cardioid or supercardioid mic for inside recording, it's always better to try to find a room that has less reflections, because no matter what the mic is, the better sounding and the more dampened a room is, the better the audio will be. So just keep that in mind. Another thing to keep in mind is, when you're recording audio for an interview, always take the time to record about a minute's worth of audio when no one is speaking before the interview happens. And that way, you can take that, if there's any background noise like cars, maybe you're inside in a city recording interviews in an office space, but you can kind of hear some highway noise outside, record about a minute of audio in that room, exactly how it's going to be set up for the interview, like literally right before the person starts speaking. Just ask them to be quiet for a minute, tell them not to make any noises, and just pick up about 60 seconds of that dead space, so that in post you can do what's called capture noise print in programs like Adobe Audition to capture the sounds of that background noise. And so the program will learn that sound, and then you can apply it to the interview using noise reduction, and it will find that sound in the interview audio and remove it. It's like magic, but it's hard to do if you don't take the time to capture that background noise first, before anyone's talking. So always, when you're recording interviews, even if it sounds quiet in your headphones, just to be safe, always, always, always record 60 seconds of dead space, so you have that to work with if you have to remove something in post. Maybe it's the hum of a refrigerator that you don't even notice. You know, if you capture that that 60 second window and you're going to edit your audio and you hear it, you'll be able to remove it. So always do that. And take the time when you're recording audio to cut off the AC, unless it's ridiculously hot, but try to cut off the AC. Try to unplug refrigerators, try to turn off computers and hard drives and things, and just remove as much of that as possible. Remember, trying to fix things in post is not the way to go with anything, but especially not with audio. Audio needs to sound good when you capture it for it to really sound good in post. Anyway, those are most of the tips I have today. Just my biggest takeaways are, the closer you are to the microphone, the better it will sound. Use lav mics as your number one first purchase to get, because they're good in all environments. They're like a Swiss Army knife. And then use boom audio for the more pristine audio as you upgrade or expand your equipment list over the years. Look for shotgun mics for outside boom recording, and cardioid or supercardioid mics for inside audio recordings. Try to dampen the rooms you're in to take away reverb. Look for rooms that have little to no reverb, but clapping your hands. Unplug things. Listen for refrigerators, stuff like that. Unplug them. Turn off air conditioning. Record 60 seconds of dead space before the interview starts, so you have that to work with capture noise print and noise reduction in post. Take the time to play around with the lav mics to make sure there's no scratchiness, and try to have your audio levels hit around negative 12 and never hitting zero. And more than anything, do your best to get it as good as you possibly can captured in the field, so that it already sounds good when you get to post. I hope that you guys found this useful. If you enjoyed this podcast and you feel like you learned something from it, please comment on the podcast and let me know. Also, please rate it so more people will know to listen to it. And be sure to hit subscribe if you aren't already subscribed to the Filming with Josh podcast. Speaking of Filming with Josh, take the time to go over to Facebook, type in Filming with Josh, and ask to join the Filming with Josh group. The Filming with Josh group is now over 500 members strong and is a great, great resource, a great place to go to learn all about video production from more than 500 people that want to learn just like you. Thanks, guys, for taking the time to listen to this podcast. Stay safe, and I'll see you next time.
To learn more about Rustic River Media, visit us online at rusticriver.media. Thanks for listening to the Filming with Josh podcast. Catch every episode by hitting subscribe today.